You're listening to The Higher Ed Marketer, the podcast for marketing professionals in higher education. Join us every week as we talk to the industry's greatest minds in student recruitment, donor relations, marketing trends, new technologies, and much more. If you're looking for conversations centered around where marketing in higher ed is going, this podcast is for you. Let's get into the show.
Welcome back to the Higher Ed Marketer Podcast, where today we're exploring the heart of a current higher education landscape, and that is merging marketing departments. I'm Troy Singer.
And I'm Bart Kaler.
And we are delighted to have Ken Sage-Paul with us today. And Ken's experience in navigating these types of waters will be invaluable insights as we have our discussion.
Yeah, I really love what Ken brings to the table. I mean, she's done a lot of integrations with marketing and then communication departments, kind of pulling them together as one. A lot of experience in those types of things at different institutions. And I think she brings a real experience level as well as some wisdom to that, where it's not just, you know, hey, who has the right skills and what's that happens, but she goes in a lot deeper about, you know, culture and about upskilling and about, you know, the types of people that you have on the bus and where to sit them. And so it's just a great conversation that I think you'll really enjoy.
Now, for a lot of you, you may think, I don't have to worry about this. This is not something that will happen to me. But there are other times where others have thought that, and the next day they are getting news that is different. So yeah. We recommend this conversation because it's great information for all marketing executives to have. Here's that conversation with Ken. Ken, it's great to have you here. You've been at the forefront on some MarCom team integrations. And before we jump into the official conversation, we'd love for you to kick this conversation off by sharing something, maybe a personal learning that you would either deem interesting, fun, or exciting.
Sure. I always knew the value of marketing, but I've been using marketing to help dogs on euthanasia list to find funders, fosters, adopters, or rescues. So that's been something that since I moved to California, I have done that more actively. I was doing that more passively, if you will, when I'm doing social media and email marketing on the side, because dogs are and have always been my passion. And unfortunately, the number of dogs that I see here relative to some of the other cities and states I've been in is exponentially high in terms of those who end up at the shelters and at kill shelters. So that's been a bittersweet learning experience. I feel like it's been helpful, but it's also some days emotional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there any follow-up or anything that people can do?
Well, I think just the education around getting the dogs fixed, I think that has been the major issue. A lot of the ones that end up at the shelter are not fixed, and there are backyard breeders that have had all these puppies. And so it's a cycle that won't break until we deliberately try and break it. And so I've been talking to the shelters about some educational programming around getting the dogs fixed in a way that this problem doesn't compound tenfold or eightfold or how many ever litters mm-hmm. they have.
Thank you, Ken. And I will say that my girlfriend is also about that subject, very passionate. And that's one of the reasons why it was very easy for me to want to hear more and what you have to recommend. You have an advocate here in Ohio.
I appreciate that. We need all the advocates we can get.
Very true. the reason why Bart wanted to have you on the podcast, and as I've learned, you have an experience around the dynamics of merging marketing departments, and would love to talk to you about that, starting out with assessing teams and upskilling. So if you could, when it comes to assessing team capabilities, skills is crucial to the integration, and would love to know your approach and how to ensure this process is both constructive and inclusive.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I have had the privilege, I'll say, to bring different groups of people together with different skill set and try and articulate a vision where they all feel a sense of belonging and a sense of purpose. And that has changed over time because the institution's vision and mission has changed, the leadership has changed. So in order to bring them along for the ride, I think it takes a lot of deliberate effort. One thing I've realized is that people have their own understanding, and as they should, of what they like to do, but also what they're good at doing and what they want to do. And those three sometimes are the same thing, sometimes they are not. You add that complexity to then your divisional priorities. So if I'm coming in and building the marketing arm of my organization, because we used to be communications focused, and I'm trying to reimagine some roles, so then there's an organizational or a divisional need as well. So there's the fourth complexity there. So I think just being thoughtful and mindful about separating people and positions first. I think sometimes we build an org chart with trying to fit people in that org chart and say, oh, this person would be great at this, but is that really the top of your need? I think that is a question to ask. And that's a hard question because it may mean that you might have to think something differently for that person, but it does benefit everybody in the long run to not force fit something that is happening. And for me, building a diverse and inclusive team is paramount. I, myself being an international immigrant, first generation student, now an employee, I'm very cognizant of making sure there's different voices that are behind the scenes doing the marketing function. So my leadership and my group at large are both ethnically and culturally diverse. And I think that has just benefited us in so many ways that I can't even count, and so many intangible ways, including culture.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make, Ken, is the idea that, you know, it's that classic Jim Collins, you know, where does everybody sit on the bus? We know everybody's going to be on the bus, but what seat are they going to have? And especially in today's marketing and communications world, where we've got a lot of things changing quickly. I mean, digital marketing has changed a lot. Generative AI will add a lot to the mix. Skill sets are not going to be as rigid as they once were, because I think that it's going to be a lot more fluid. And I think that if we have that ability to make sure that we understand that our teams need to be agile, first and foremost, and the best way to do some agility sometimes is have a diversity of voices and of culture and experience. And so even that, I'm sure, is adding to kind of some of the thinking that you're doing. Is that what you're finding as you're trying to merge these different teams together and make sure everybody has the right seat?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Bart, that is really, really important call out about the whole agility piece. I mean, the landscape of marketing is changing every day, it feels like. And so part of the conversation is also the insourcing, outsourcing piece and what we can continue to upskill within our own teams to keep up with those changes, and what other people and other firms and, you know, firms like yours, for instance, are more adept at embracing those changes and helping us think through implementing those changes. And having these diversity of voices has definitely propelled us forward in that capacity, because I have a whole mix of people from early adopters to sort of let's wait and see type of thing to, you know, I wouldn't call them resistors. I don't think I have any resistors, but I have encountered them in the past. So, you know, how do you kind of stay at the forefront of some of these changes in a way that you are not the only one trying to kind of really pull them along, but they are right alongside with you and helping you think and ideate and such. And having somebody like our social media manager, who actually is an international employee, and I didn't know that it was even possible for us to sponsor his visa and do that. And I'm very grateful to my organization for making that happen. He just brings a different perspective. I know that because I have lived that and I have been there. And I think the fact that he provides that in our social media presence is something that I don't think I would have gotten had I hired somebody else instead.
I love that. And I love the fact that you're kind of talking about, you know, that diversity of things, being able to upskill, being able to really leverage the team and lean into the expertise. I think that I saw a video that I've been using in my presentations recently by Jensen Huang. He's the CEO of NVIDIA. And he talks about, you know, the future of technology. And he's really on the forefront of some of their chips are being used to do a lot of the large language models and generative AI. And he talked about a future where, you know, it used to be the fact that everybody said, oh, you have to learn computer programming. It was a very niche skill. And he said now, as programmers themselves, they need to develop systems that no one should know how to program, because these systems should be able to just respond natural language on doing that. And he predicts a future where upskilling is going to be exciting. It's going to be something that's everybody's going to enjoy it, because it's going to be, you know, looking for new things, and it's going to be fun. And I thought that was interesting, because he said, we're going to lean into domain expertise. The people that just have that understanding, kind of like your social media person, that they've got that understanding, but we can upskill so that the skill sets or maybe even the confinements of whether they are in the office or they're international or different things like that, that's going to bring a whole richness to our teams and the ability for our teams to be able to, you know, be agile, be able to do the things that they can do best, because we're tapping into who they are as opposed to just a skill that they have or a technique that they can do. Maybe kind of unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, for me, it's really the idea of what do you need to have that can be taught or learned versus what are some of those innate traits that you just need to possess? And I think that's where that whole conversation comes into play, right? You know, our social media manager, he did some social media work for this one of our schools prior to joining us full time. So while that was relevant, he was also, in his undergrad, a race and ethnic studies major. And for me, that was relevant too. I have a student right now who's studying psychology and music and wants to do marketing. And for me, that is relevant. And it can be relevant. And, you know, if depending on what she wants to do and how, you know, whether she gets into a specialist role, those specialized skills can be taught by providing those opportunities to learn. And like you said, those opportunities to learn and the intuitive learning has become more fun, where people just play around with technology and find that, oh yeah, this is something I could do, and this is not that scary as I thought it would be, even though I didn't major in XYZ field. Like, how many of us in higher ed have majored in the in higher ed, right?
Exactly. Like,
and that continues to be the case. And so the constant question of attitude versus aptitude also becomes very paramount as you're looking at your team structure and who's bringing what level of skill set. And then finally, who's going to serve in a generalist model or a specialist model? Because when I merged disparate teams here, so when I came to Redlands, we were decentralized and every school had a marketing generalist and they did everything everything for that school. And while their general knowledge about marketing was helpful and important to that school, I think, and at my previous institution too, we've seen that when one person is asked to do a variety of marketing functions, you see more attrition. And that continues to show in terms of organizational data. And so I changed that model to be more of a functional expert that can serve all the schools rather than somebody that's assigned to a specific school, which makes sense in like functions like enrollment or alumni relations, where you have your beat or your focus area. But in marketing, where you just need such a diverse set of skills, you need a diverse set of people.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think that I like the fact that you brought in the diversity, not only in the, you know, race, ethnicity, gender, those types of things, obviously, but also in that background. I mean, I think having somebody who has a history background on your marketing team could be a really a big asset. Yeah, which I think is great, because I was recently talking to somebody, because I have a belief that generative AI is going to have a major comeback for the liberal arts and for, you know, that more of a classical approach to education where you understand things, because you're going to need to know that knowledge to be able to put in the prompts and be able to have the tools, be able to get what you want out of it. And so being able to have a diversity of those backgrounds on your team as well, I think is going to add a richness to that full culture that you're doing, not only in just the different, what we typically think of culture, but also just that ability to kind of approach problems differently. And do you have some examples even of that person who has the history background and what they bring to your team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like we have colleagues right now too, who started out in history or philosophy or sociology and others, and have now found themselves in CMO roles or are leading marketing agencies. I don't know about what your major was. I'm not going to put you on the spot.
It was graphic design, but I had a couple minors that were not anything that I would be doing right now.
Yeah. Which is interesting, as we are in higher education too, right? We are preparing students to pursue careers, but also we are hopefully also teaching students this wide breadth of skills that they can apply to no matter what career they choose, and that is transferable. And that's really been the essence of a lot of what we teach here. However, yeah, I mean, whether it's a history, I mean, sometimes I don't even know what people's majors are, because they're just so good at what they do and they have taken the time to learn on their own. I have a person who got their bachelor's 12 years after working here, but she was already working at a newspaper writing stories before that. She was the web editor before that. And once she got her bachelor's, she went on to get her master's. And now she's leading our content and creative team. And so sometimes it's not even what major you have. It's the idea that you have educated yourself in a way that has positioned you for success. And yes, you have got the formal training and formal education, because you know that is going to come in handy. Because when she was promoted to the director, she had both her degrees. But prior to that, while she was working in web and journalism and story writing and such, you know, I think our higher education value propositions still hold true, which is those without a bachelor's degree in the long run are not being compensated at the same level as those with. And that proved to be the case even here. So it's very fascinating to kind of see how people's disparate backgrounds and educational backgrounds, or lack thereof, have been contributing to sort of just that appreciation even for education. She comes with this such a positive mindset and attitude towards the university right now. I mean, not right now. I'm sure it's been the case. I've just had the pleasure of working with her right now. But she just comes with this like I will, you know, I'm here to stay and I will do whatever it takes to make sure our institution succeeds, because the education I got here has been invaluable. And that without that, I wouldn't be in the position I was today. And y'all took a chance on me, and I will do whatever it takes. And so stories like that just make you feel like, especially as a leader, that you are in a position of privilege to give those opportunities and create those opportunities, and that you have to do right by them because it's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, I've often told people that, you know, even though I had a major in the field, I feel like I learned more and my education was worth more in the way that I was taught how to learn, learn new things. I mean, I'm more grateful for that in my higher education, especially as a first-gen student, as you are and Troy is. But just having the ability that someone taught me how to consume information and learn and be able to do some critical thinking to figure things out, that's a skill set that I've used every day since I have left my college. I can't say that I've used every skill that I learned in my graphic design classes in the 80s because it's changed a lot. But I think that ability to learn how to learn is so critical.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I decided to pursue an American education. It wasn't that there wasn't an education back home. And home for me is India. It was just very learning by rote method. You just consume all this, or you take it all in and you regurgitate it in your test. And that was not for me a way to learn. And that is precisely what I feel has been the most important part of my education here.
Ken would now like to ask you about building efficient, cohesive teams. And once a team is integrated, I assume the goal is to build a cohesive and efficient unit, but would love to know your approaches that you have found effective in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, the cohesiveness is important, but understanding everybody's an individual is also critical, right? And this particularly comes into play. I've been through a couple of mergers or going through a couple of them, and so I think part of it is just understanding how cultures can be different. Even in your own organization, depending on which department you talk about, sometimes they can be different. But so one of the first things our president did, which I think almost any new institutional leader would do, is establish the institution's mission and values. And so with that becoming sort of the foundation, I think it becomes a little bit easier to rally around something, to all be like, okay, this is what we value, and this is how we're going to highlight that in everything we say and do. And for me, the idea of having one team is not something you can enforce, right? It has to be organic. It has to feel organic, even though you might put some intentionality behind it. So for me, accountability and ownership of individuals, of their own roles, and what it is that they are doing in order to contribute to the greater good is critical. So how we've typically worked is we've had the strategic plan goals. They ladder up to the divisional goals, and then those go down all the way to the individual contributor level. And that way we are all measuring and working towards the same idea. And those goals are not only functional goals, but also cultural goals. So I have tried to incorporate a cultural goal for every member of the team. And that can look different for them based on how they want to see the culture evolve. But it has to be one tangible outcome for enhancement of the culture. And so I had somebody who decided every Friday we are just going to have a coffee hour where we'll all get on Teams and or Zoom, whatever, and have a conversation that is not work-related. And that was so effective. It's something like people miss it when it doesn't happen. Somebody else is more of, I would say, the thought leader, and it's trying to share some best practices and keeping us on our, and raising those questions. And you know, we have a channel on our teams about some of the new research that they're seeing. And then I have somebody who writes on the whiteboard the joke of the day or the riddle of the day. And so, you know, just giving people that ownership. And oh, yeah, there's a one self-proclaimed party planner, which kind of reminds me of The Office, where they had all the people, all the women, which is complete no-no for me. It's like, why are women being the party planners? So anyway, that individual on my team wants to plan both celebrations, but also recognize important milestones. And so that's how that's come to be. So I think between goal setting and having ownership and accountability, and then having a way to ladder up to institutional goals, those are the types of things that I feel like have made us feel like one team. Of course, there are, you know, things we do for team building. We try to be intentional there. And, you know, we had one of our former mergers, well, it's not former, it's still going through Department of Education approvals. You know, Presidio Graduate School, they had a marketing specialist. She became part of our organization through the process. And, you know, for us, it was very important for us to use her institutional knowledge of that school. But it was also important for her to feel like she wasn't an outsider, because she was the only one that came and was working there. It wasn't that there were others. It was a small school, so she was the only one. So I think just being thoughtful about where people are coming from and then giving them time to assimilate and giving them time to integrate, because as we all, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir, but this doesn't happen overnight. And especially, you know, if you're coming out of such a big change like the pandemic, you don't want to force change where you can avoid it, you know, because there is some level of change fatigue. So I think you have to be just cautious and deliberate about that.
I appreciate that. I think that deliberate position and being very intentional on things is so important. Just as an example, we had a quarter goal this year that we wanted to, you know, build culture up, you know, and institute something for culture. Because what we've discovered is late last year, as my travel schedule kind of ramped up, I was not able to be on all the weekly meetings. We used to have a large weekly meeting where we're all virtual, so it was all Zoom. And then we also started assessing it and saying, is this the best use of everybody's time to just be on an hour and a half Zoom listening to everybody else's projects? And so we decided to kind of go to a monthly meeting instead of a weekly. And that was a shock to everybody. They're like, well, this is when I get to talk to everybody. What's going on? So we actually started a group chat in our Gmail account. We called it the Kaler Solutions Water Cooler. And it's just the place where people can upload the pictures of their new puppy or, you know, what's going on in their life and different things. And that has been such a remarkable, huge piece of our culture that I feel like we're closer by doing that than we were on meeting weekly just on Zoom. And so I really appreciate you kind of pointing out the fact that not only do you have these institutional goals or marketing goals, but you also have these personal cultural goals, which, you know, until you said that, and I thought about our own experience, how crucial that's been for our team to be able to integrate a more close-knit team that ultimately ends up being better work because we all feel like we can trust each other better. And so I love that. And I love the fact that you've indicated that.
Yeah, that was the silver lining, I think, of the pandemic, right? It got a lot of people to get on these virtual happy hours and so on and so forth. And I think, especially if you work remotely, and we have some remote and some hybrid and some on campus, so we have all three variations of modality. How do you best integrate that? And I think for us, it had to be a mix of some things that we were just going to go to a restaurant for, you know, in December during the holidays or before the holidays. But other times we're just going to do some things online, you know. And so, yeah, it's the intentionality and then finding ways to have that outlet where people can share.
That's great. I love that.
Ken, our last question of you today is going to be, if there would be a piece of actionable advice that once listeners heard, they could implement rather quickly and maybe achieve a success or move a brick rather quickly.
And I assume you mean in the realm of integrating teams. And so I would say that one of the things that I would say is really try and get to know people that are in different areas that you may not partner with on a regular basis. And if you are in a position like mine, maybe have skip level meetings that you're not only meeting with your direct reports, but their direct reports. I think those are all very powerful because once we get into our own bubble of the people that we are constantly leaning on and talking to, the other part becomes a little bit of hearsay. The other part becomes a little bit of out of sight, out of mind. So what are those ways in which maybe identify that one person you have not talked to outside of maybe a project in a group setting. Just be like, hey, we've crossed paths, but I don't know that I know you in a way that I would like to know you. Just seek that out. And while I say that for that other person's benefit, because they feel welcomed and that somebody's taking interest, it really benefits you as well. And makes you feel like, okay, you understand something about that person's work, that person's personality, that just sheds some light on how things can be even better going forward when it comes to work projects or otherwise.
That's great.
That is great. Again, everyone, we've been listening to Ken Sage Paul. She is the Vice President, Marketing Communications, and Chief Marketing Officer at the University of Redlands. Ken, what would be the best way for someone to reach you if they would like to connect?
I think LinkedIn is probably the best at this point. I have exited X a little bit, even though I have a profile there, and I will occasionally go and see what's bubbling because FOMO is real. But for professional connections or just in general networking, LinkedIn is probably best. So you can find me at LinkedIn on just search Ken Sage Paul. Hopefully I'll show up.
Thank you very much. And the wisdom, the advice on actionable ways to create a efficient team has been invaluable. So again, thank you very much for being a guest today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mr. Bart Kaler, what are your final words before we end our episode?
I just want to say thanks, Ken. This has been a great conversation. I love the intentionality that Ken approaches her work. And I've known that for a while, kind of from a distance, but just being able to hear her talk about the intentionality of building these teams and integrating teams, it reminds me a little bit of last week's conversation that we had with Jamie Seaman and the fact that she talked a lot about the importance of integrating teams and kind of looking at, you know, those marketing maturity models so that you can kind of, you know, build a more effective MarCom presence at your institution. But I think it's not only integrating teams that, you know, maybe you're pulling MarCom and together, maybe you're trying to figure out how to better work together as a team. And maybe in this world of mergers and acquisitions, you know, your school has recently acquired or you've been acquired. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for us to kind of put these teams together and be a lot more intentional and effective about that, whether it's the way that we help each other upskill, whether we start to recognize the unique opportunities that we all bring with our own backgrounds and the diversity that we have, or if it's just even this cultural intentionality of trying to make sure that our teams work well. I think Ken's done such a great job of kind of unpacking a lot of that for us. I would encourage you to rewind and take some notes because I think there's a lot of really good gold in this one today. So again, thank you, Ken. Appreciate the opportunity to talk today. And it's been a wonderful conversation.
Well said, Bart. And thank you both for creating a wonderful episode. The Higher Ed Marketer Podcast is brought to you by Kaler Solutions, your specialist in the field of education, marketing, and branding, and by Ring Digital, the experts in ad targeting, known for significantly improving response and yield by accurately targeting ads to the devices of individuals on your enrollment and fundraising list. On behalf of Ken, Bart and myself, Troy, thanks again for joining us.
You've been listening to The Higher Ed Marketer. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. The Higher Ed Marketer is a production of Kaler Solutions and Ring Digital in partnership with Westport Studios. Views and opinions expressed by guests on The Higher Ed Marketer are their own and may not reflect the views and opinions of their organization. Know someone who's a mover and a shaker in higher ed marketing? Visit www.higheredmarketerpodcast.com and click on our Contact Us page. We'd love to have you tell us about them. Until next time.